Welcome back to HTP Podcast, where we go beyond just strokes and strategy. And our mission here today is to change the culture of tennis, having one conversation at a time through a more positive and holistic approach. And today I have Allie here on the pod, and really cool. So Allie and I met at the USTA Women's Summit. It was like their first year, I think they had it. Just hit it off in a lot of different ways, whether it was tennis or other things outside of tennis. We just like immediately connected. As I started doing this podcast, I was like, oh, I gotta have her on. Yes, but you started at a young age. So if you can just go in and, you know, how you got into tennis, what you love about tennis, what you hate about tennis, all everything in between.
Thanks, Jarrett. You are incredible. And so,
Thank
thanks for
you.
having me here. I'm stoked to be here. A little bit about my tennis background. My dad was actually the high school girls coach when
Okay.
ever pretty much since I was born, I think. I grew up going to the matches, and I was like, I want to do this. The outfits are really cute.
Yes.
The club growing up, you had to be 8 in order to get a lesson. And so
Okay.
dad started me out with red ball. He was ahead of his time. And so he got the
Yeah.
balls from Europe, like got them in. And so that was kind of my first introductory to it. And then I met my tennis coach, Susan, who, shout out to Susan Cianciola. She is one of the most influential people in my life to date. And she was my coach from when I was 8 years old onwards. It was, hey, just work really hard. And if you just show up and give your best, like things will work out for you. And so she always had that philosophy definitely ingrained in me from a young age of, hey, move your feet, get to every ball, like be to the point, like be so consistent where people have to beat you, not you beat yourself. And so that's very much
How
that.
cool. What a great coach you had.
Oh, she was. And she is a character. And feel free to edit this part out. But when I was my very first lesson, I am so excited. It's like, okay, move your feet. Like, okay, move your feet, move your feet. And I wasn't moving my feet. I'm 8 years old. I'm just like, da, 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 da. She's like, move your fucking feet. And my dad is in the back, and I look at my dad, and my dad goes, move your feet. And guess what? I have never stopped moving my feet to this day. And I do, like, I tell everyone that story of just being like, hey, she's gonna be hard on you, but you'll get better. And still very close to this day. And so,
Ah, I love that.
yeah. And so I grew up playing in Northeastern Ohio. It was at the time where Lauren Davis was 3 years older than me. Nicole
Okay.
was 2 or 3 years older than me. Kylie McPhillips was
Wow.
three, super solid tennis. And I remember my first like Midwest qualifier, which is in Northeastern Ohio, like Lauren Davis was playing in it. And I will still tell people, I'm like, she was there. And right, like everyone has to start somewhere. And so you have these overlaps. I was like, I got one game off of you when I was in juniors. And so for the rest of my life. I grew up in a time where everyone was super competitive and it was a really intense but rewarding, and everyone was really close. Like some of the girls who I played juniors with from Adrian Heard, like we still talk and keep in contact. And I think that's really special because you have this overlap of understanding the time commitment and following of, hey, yeah, you go here and through college careers, now life and having babies. It's like you get to have all of these chapters, which I think is so special. And now she's actually teaching her son. So it's
Aww, yeah.
I played until I was about 11 or 12 years old, and then my parents ended up getting divorced, and so I stopped playing tennis until high school. And yeah, it was, so I took 3 years off, just didn't really, I was like, I don't want to do this. And then just played high school fall season for in Ohio. And after my sophomore year, I was like, oh, I'm like finished top 8 in the state. And in the state of Ohio, tennis is really competitive. I mean, I just told you some of the pedigree that we were competing. And I said, oh, okay, like I might be able to do this. Like if I want to go play college, like this is something that's very doable. And so then I started to buckle down, and I still played basketball as well. So as soon as tennis and basketball picked up on Sunday nights, I played in a league with my dad. So I still played once a week, and it was cool getting
How
to have
cool.
moment with him. And you played a set of doubles, and then we each did a instead of singles. So it was like a mini world team tennis just with pairs. So it was a lot of fun.
How fun. What a great memory with you and your dad, and to have that relationship in that way. That's beautiful.
So much fun. And he really was my first coach, and he coached me in basketball, he coached me in other sports too. It is fun. And like still to this day, like we can go out and hit, or when I go back home, I go out to his girls and guys practices and I'll go hit with his players because he goes, "Come on, like come on." I go, "Oh, yeah, like let's go do it." So it definitely is really special, and you don't really realize it in the moment, but incredibly grateful for it. And then my senior year, I was deciding on where I wanted to go to school. I was between Mary Washington, which is a small D3 school, University of Akron, which at the time they were top 75 in the country, so they were a really solid team, and then the Naval Academy. And I had offers to play tennis from Mary Washington and Akron. I didn't have one from Navy. So what ended up happening was I beat one of their high recruits that they were recruiting to leverage, because I didn't play tournaments and so anymore. So I used that to leverage. It kind of like was my foot in the door. And they were like, "Well, if you get into the academy on your own merit, then we can, like, you have a spot." And so I ended up getting in on my own merit, which is abnormal for athletes. Like typically you process, but no, I went through the full process and it was at Navy, played for my first 2 years. At the end of my sophomore season, like in the middle of it, I ended up actually stress fracturing both femoral necks in my and so I was a little taken aback and didn't know really like what I wanted to do. And I was actually having like a miserable time. I hated college tennis. I didn't have the like same really great experience that a lot of people do. And it's something where when I tell people where they're going, and during like my mentorship, I always tell them, I'm like, okay, look at academics first, because if you help people, like this is something where you can stay with it. And sometimes tennis can get you in the door of a school where you might not be able to, or it gives you an edge, the Ivies and things like that.
Absolutely.
And then put the coach second. It is a really big dynamic. And like, if you don't have a good relationship with your coach, then it does impact your mental health and it does impact like your enjoyment level. And you are 18, 19, 20 years old trying to figure out being away from home, figuring out all these things. And you don't know how to always do it. Sometimes those are really hard things. And just know that my piece of advice to people is like, if you're not having a great time, know that you're not alone. Like, especially in today's day and age, I feel like everyone just kind of says, "Oh, everything's great. This thing ever." But if you're not enjoying it, like dig in deeper there and figure out why. Is it because you're not reaching your potential? Is there a dynamic? Like, and can you address it? Can you advocate for yourself? Is there things that you can do? Do you want to transfer? Do you want to do like X, Y, and Z? Know that it's okay if it's not the experience that everyone raves about it. I am very grateful for my experience of being a Division I athlete. And at the same time, I can also look at it and say, yeah, it wasn't my favorite part of my career by any means. And
I think that I just want to add in, I think that's such a great point, Allie, which is like why I want to do this, because everyone has a different story, right, to share. And not everyone does have a positive experience in college. I think what you're saying is phenomenal. Look at the academic, and then look at the coach. And there's even times where people actually choose university solely because of the coach. And then they may transfer as a coach. They may go to another program, something may happen. And then they're like, well, this isn't the same for me anymore. What you're saying, like you don't get along with your coach, and now NCAA rules have changed, but during that time, like pretty much stuck where you were. Once the coach kind of knows you want to leave, they can either keep you and make your life miserable, or they can allow you to transfer. But not every coach is like that, which is really sad because they're taking it personal, which it can be, but really it's like you should be looking at the player's future and their potential and what's really right for them, instead of as a coach saying, okay, yeah, I don't see eye to eye with this player. Thank you for sharing that, because I do think that is a lot more common than, you know, people share. Like you're saying, everyone just wants to show like their best highlight when that's not actually happening. That is a great point, what you're sharing right now.
Yeah, well, thanks. And I think hear from, again, people who have been there and just owning it. And with the caveat too of, hey, if it gets hard, try and work through it. Like, try and figure out first. Don't just run. I think you can learn a lot about yourself. But there's a point where, hey, counsel with your friends and who are outside of the team, maybe your parents, and or if you have a sports psychologist on the team, like talk to these people and try and figure out dynamics and say, hey, is there a different way that I could approach this? Or could I have an honest conversation with the coach? Like, there's different ways. Try those first before just running. Know that it's okay. After that, I didn't really play for another 3 or 4 years just because I think everyone goes through the phase of you're a little bit burnt out. And it's, and I still was teaching at that time, but I was strictly kids. I did, it was called Success After Six in Youngstown, Ohio. And essentially it was an NJTL partnership with the inner city schools and United Way. And it was, hey, we went and taught them tennis and then you still have the academic portions. And it was just, it was so rewarding giving them a chance to just, again, just learn something, have some fun, be surrounded by people who care about them. I was strictly just with kids. And then I ended up moving out to Phoenix after that because I wanted to move and try something new. So I literally moved cross country without having a job. And no, literally. And I reached out to local tennis clubs. I was like, hey, here's my background. Would love to teach, coach for you, whatever is available. Because I realized at that point in my life, I was like, okay, I'm missing this and I'm having some fun again. I ended up taking a coaching job at a local club in Phoenix. It was, I initially came on as high performance, and then there were some egos involved, as we know in tennis. And when clients started to switch to me, I got moved to introductory beginners, which is fine. Like, here's the thing, grow where you're planted and just make the best of any situation. And at the end of the day, like doing tennis, like I loved it and it was a lot of fun. Through that, I met different people. And then I ended up actually meeting Matt Gleason, who is, I know his title has changed a couple times. Met him. We were on a world team tennis team together. And he goes, hey, like there's a job opening up. Like, you should look at it. Sure enough, I applied, and that's how I got started with USTA. I was the tennis service representative for Phoenix and jack of all trades, just dabbled in everything. 5 months later, COVID hit. That was a really interesting time. It was also really cool because got to strengthen the relationships with clubs in the area because we were like, hey, we can't offer you much, but we can offer you a couple $1,000 in grants so you can try and open your doors and keep, whether it's PPP or getting like sanitization, whatever it is. So that was really fun. After about 2 years, I ended up moving to Texas. Took a step back from tennis and working. I tried. And then, as soon as a job opened up about 6 months later, I applied and I was the community services coordinator for San Antonio in USTA, Texas. And I oversaw
Cool.
all collegiate operations from intramurals to TOC club to varsity, D3, NAIA, D1, everything in between. And it was when I tell you that that was the most fun that I think I've ever had. Tennis on campus, everyone should be playing it. And had I known about this program as a Division I athlete, I genuinely might have chosen a different path.
Wow, that says a lot.
Yeah, because it wasn't available. Well, it was available, it just wasn't as widely known. It was a lot of fun to interact because they have, you have ex college players, you have people who compete at a really high level, and you're like, dang, like these teams are good. Like they could have gone and played at other smaller D1s, but if you want to go to the Virginias or the UT, or like Texas A&M, who the women are ranked number one, like you're not getting on that team unless you are a blue chip recruit. And so it gives them an opportunity to still be competitive in the co-ed and stuff like that. That is where I spent 3.5 years. And I actually recently just moved to California. My first time I'm not actively working in tennis. I am looking to apply for both the USTA National Board and USTA NorCal when the next
Cool.
school's open, just so I can keep a pulse on it. Yeah. And there's other like little fun things I've done in between. And I built a whole practicum during my yoga teacher training on, hey, how can we strengthen specifically for tennis? Like, what are things that we can do? I have some fun
Cool.
little nuggets that eventually they will come out, but I want to make sure that I dedicate the time to them and that they're full to fruition. So that's a little bit about my tennis story. And I'm also a three-time NTRP national champion, which is a fun fact.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, How cool. That's amazing. Still use yoga and tennis now, or okay. So what does that look like now?
So the way that I incorporate it is yoga is, most people think of just the act of practicing yoga, but it's so much more than that. It's a lot of the mental and just being able to slow your mind, find one with your breath, and just physically be present. Like that is the whole point of yoga, is like to be present within your body. I use a lot of those techniques in not only just tennis, but my day-to-day life of how I approach things. And when you start to feel your heart race or you get nervous, it's like, hey, come back to your breath work, which is all yoga. Like there's certain things that you can do to dial in. And I love educating athletes as a whole. Yes, specifically tennis, because that's my love. I've mentored other athletes and it's like, hey, okay, let's take a step back after you've had a long point. Come and do these breathing exercises. You're getting overwhelmed. Let's do a little bit of box breathing. Like let's figure it out with yoga as well. Like you can do really hard things and push your body past where you think you can. It's like go hold Warrior Two for 5 minutes and yourself. Like you might cry a little bit, but hey, you can go do really hard things. And what also comes from that is also the proprioception. And so just spatial awareness, which as we know as tennis players is so critical. So if you know, hey, my hand is here, like how you move your body, move better on the court because you're aware of how your body moves and you just like you build on that athleticism, which I think is really cool. So that's a little bit of what I do with yoga.
I love, 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 love that, Allie. That is amazing. And the tools that you're giving these people are just things that you can use off the court too, which I love. You know, I'm a huge advocate for that and the mental side and breath and all of that. And I do think yoga is such a great tool to allow people to utilize that and then, you know, bring it into a sport as well. I mean, I know like when I really started getting into, like you're saying, like initially I got into yoga because it's like, oh, let me do some cross training. You can still like it's faster or even the hot yoga, but that is like so westernized yoga when, you know, what you're talking about is really getting to the core of what yoga is. And actually, I feel like so many tennis players and tennis coaches are really hyperactive, whether they have, you know, ADD or ADHD or not, or just like, yeah. And it really, for as much as like you're uncomfortable in doing it, it forces you to slow down. And I love
It too, and I feel like people just
it.
don't, because you don't know what you don't know, and it's like, oh, that's, and sometimes there's a barrier to entry with cost and things like that. And but just get inside your mind, like you'll find peace. And the Yamas and Niyamas, great book, highly recommend. I'll send you a link. I don't know if you're familiar with this book, but I think that's
No, I'm
something.
not. I'd love it.
Where, and again, I think any athlete, especially tennis players, like you could read it and just understand like some of the principles of yoga and like foundation, and you can take it. It's principles just how you treat other people and attachment and just only taking what you need and not everything. And so it applies, especially in tennis. Like I think, hey, we're a self-governing body on the court. One of the yoga philosophies is don't steal. Well, we call our own lines. And so when you're calling your own lines, if you're not 100% sure, just play it in and say, hey, great job. I don't really know. When you give that benefit of the doubt, people might say, hey, actually, like that was out. Like, thanks for trying to be honest. And then you build this rapport with people and you realize, whereas if you might have called that out and they thought it was in, you have a completely different dynamic has changed and there's not a way to bridge it. And so you can apply these principles that have been around for centuries upon centuries and use them and say, oh, this is actually really applicable to our sport because I am the authoritarian of my side. I think it's really cool. And just that alignment and just approaching it that way. And I think a lot of people would be a lot nicer if they were just aware like that. If you tell people, and sometimes like that's all you need is to give people the benefit of the doubt, and then they show up in such a better capacity than already count them out. Give people a chance to show up and be who they want to be. Don't put them in a box ahead of time.
I love that. That's like phenomenal. phenomenal advice, honestly. I was going to be like, what's one advice? But yeah, you already dropped a lot of great gems, honestly. I do want to ask you, what is one thing you wish you knew now that you wish you knew like when you were younger, going to college or, to help another tennis player kind of put things into perspective?
It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And like, I know, like, that sounds really harsh, right? Because it's like you've built your identity around it. And that's something that is hard of one, it's not that big of a deal. And two, find who you are outside of tennis. Because when you have that, it actually strengthens your tennis because you know who you are outside the court and you don't get as wrapped up. If you have a win or a loss, you can take a step back and be like, okay, that sucks, or hey, I'm really glad. I also have all these other things to offer. I think sometimes we get lost in it because as tennis players, we are on an island. We're all the center of our own universe. Even if you're on a team, even like doubles, it's just two people. And so it's really hard to not lose your identity in the sport you are playing. But at the end of the day, like you are you and the sport is the sport and you are not the sport. And I was like, and I think Hannah Berner, who most people know, she played at Wisconsin, huge podcaster, comedian. Now she actually has a bit about it of like, I didn't know who I was after tennis because it was your career and you trained to go pro and you do all of this. And now she's like, it's not that serious. And when you take the serious aspect out, you're gonna play better. I'm such a better tennis player now than I was in college. And I was a really good player back then, but now I go, I just don't care. And then sometimes you're like, oh, okay. Like you surprise yourself and you have fun. So those are my two takeaways.
Oh,
Find your
I
identity
love that.
outside of tennis and it does not matter. Like this doesn't matter. Figure it out.
That's
It
so good.
might be
Yeah, I love that. I definitely got caught up with my identity in tennis for sure. Like, I could have a whole other episode on that.
The mental turmoil it took.
Yeah, that's so good. I was like, I'm gonna have to have you on another time to go kind of deeper into some of these topics. I would love that. Thank you so much, Ali, for your time today. If you guys like these tennis tales, please share, like, and subscribe.